Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2680. That's 2680. And tonight, our guest that we had scheduled is not able to make it. And so therefore, we are going to have a question and answer night. Hey, people out there, you have a good panel that is starting up now. It's very nice. Please do keep calling in. That's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. You have Pamela Lockridge, who she's a social worker, and I'm a counselor. So there you go. So if you have any questions that you need to, or things that you want to talk about, feel free. Okay, but before we start, and it's getting here, we have a nice panel building. All right, I'm Carol Levine. I am Vice President of NASCA, and I do want to read the NASCA mission statement. And I will start by saying educating the public, that's especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone, and it does. When's the last time you had your house broken into? Happened to me. Okay. Number two, offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues that's involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Prevention is something I'm I believe so much in is prevention, because if we speak more to our children in the homes that are normal, as I like to say, or the normie homes, whatever, we can teach our children. But first, we have to be educated, okay? The parents have to be educated. And that's when I talk about, our website. That's www.NASCA.org, NASCA.org. If you go to that website, our website, you will have a wealth of information right in front of you, and you can look up almost anything, and get answers to your questions. It'll also teach you how to speak to your children and when it's appropriate and when it's not, and what type of behaviors that are in front of our children and how it affects them, and that's something that we're going to talk a little bit about tonight, because it's so important. Remember, our children look to us for guidance, for nurturing, and all these things that children are supposed to have for love, the word love, L-O-V-E. Hey, people are afraid to say the word love. It's not said enough. And, so when we have children that are not brought up properly, many times, they take their anger out on the streets, they take it out other ways, and maybe they get married, and they take it out on their families. And we have a lot of domestic violence going on. Normally, before the pandemic, we had domestic violence going on, you bet, because it's always been here. But, unfortunately, it has gone sky high, okay, since COVID hit. That certainly didn't help any one of us. And with parents losing their jobs and so forth, and just with the fear, I suppose, of catching it themselves, it's caused a lot of grief in the home. Now, some 3.3 million children, and this is a low ball number. This is right before the COVID. So I'm going to have to raise this. In fact, I've seen it risen. At least 3.3 million children witness domestic violence in their homes each year. Okay? 1 in 4 women and 1 in 9 men will experience domestic violence in their lifetime. That's gone up, too, because there's a lot of fighting right between husband and wife. 1 in 5 teen girls and 1 in 10 teen boys are victims of dating violence. When there's violence in the homes, and this is what the kids know, they tend to choose partners that are volatile because this is what they know. And some don't even quite realize. They just walk right into it. A lot of us on NASCA have done the same thing. Now, we have a very healthy panel here tonight. We have Pamela from Louisiana, and she's a board member, and she's also ambassador, okay, of Louisiana. We have Doug. Doug is a man that's been calling in lately quite a bit, and we're happy to have him here. We have Mary Ellen, my friend from New York who sounds just like me. We have Janet from, is that Louisiana? Again, yes, Louisiana. And we have Bill from California. There you go. So, you know, you can still keep calling in, though. It's 646-595-2118. If there's anything that you want to ask, okay, any type of questions at all, remember, we're survivors here at NASCA, and we do have a lot of, you know, experience from the streets, a lot of us, I certainly do. And then also, too, we have schooling, you know, and we have a little bit of everything. So whatever you need, we can probably help you. If we can't help you, we tell you to go to the programs. I get AM calls. I'm the night owl. And on that website that I'm so proud of that I speak about so often, if you go all the way over to the left-hand side, you'll find that there's programs that you can open up. And it's really kind of like self-explanatory. And you can find your state. You find your area where you live. And you'll actually click onto that, and that will give you programs maybe that you didn't even know about. Maybe it's right in your area, or maybe 5-10 minutes away, whatever, but nearby. And those programs help people. They help people. I've gotten a good amount of feedback. So you have that, and of course you always have NASCA. And you have people that you can call, you can contact on the contact list. You know, and again, if you need people in the AM, I am here. I am the night owl. I'm not the only one. I'm sure there's more. But anyway, the point is this. You know, the best thing for people to do is to get the help that they need. And that can come in all different flavors. Some go to therapists. Some work through the church like I did. I actually found a good Catholic church. Oh, my God. Others find other ways of healing, okay, of healing. And but always remember, whether it be through counselors or therapists, psychiatrists, remember that they have to know about child abuse. And if they are well-versed in, you know, what child abuse can do to you and help you in those areas, and you're willing to do the work, you will heal, okay? I healed. Bill healed. I'm not saying we're 100%. Pamela healed. Everybody's healing, okay? But you have to put the work in, too. Okay, so let me go down the panel here a little bit, and I know Doug has something he wants to talk about, but we're going to start at the top of the list because that's what we do here, and we work our way down as we go down, and I see that Mark also has called in. Okay, that's very good. We have a nice-sized panel here. Pamela, is there something that you wanted to speak about tonight, and then I'll certainly add to that what I know also. Go ahead.
Not right this minute. I would like to hear other guests bring up topics right now.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Okay. Let's go down to Doug. All right. Doug, is there something that you, in specific, that you wanted to talk about, something that's bothering you? Because you had mentioned earlier, before the show actually started, that, you know, you have issues that you might want to bring up. Go ahead.
Thank you. I guess one thing is that, I mean, I feel like very split, fragmented, and there's just a part of me that keeps crying about why. Why, you know, like, why did my parents do what they did? And, you know, my psychiatrist said, Doug, any explanation would just be an excuse. What your parents did to you was evil. And the therapist I saw back in New Jersey when I recovered the memories, she said, I mean, yeah, she said, Doug, you're trying to make sense of something that doesn't make any sense. And I accept what they both said. I agree with them, but there's still, you know, the child parts and everything. That's like, why? I mean, these were my parents, my mother and my father. This was the father who went out and worked hard and put money aside for me to go to college when I was young. And this was the mother who ate spinach for 9 months so I would develop healthily and took care of me when I was an infant and always took me to the doctors when I got sick and everything. And so my parents did a lot of good and wonderful things for me, but then they did all these horrible, evil things to me. And it's just like, sometimes I wish they were just both pure evil and then that was it. It would be easier to understand. But it just, I mean, thank God for modern medicine and stuff. And because that's all I guess I could share right now. But
let me ask you something, Doug.
Sure.
The background of your parents, did they come from abusive homes? Do you know?
Oh, yes. Yes.
They did?
Yeah, my mother's father, she was the youngest of three children, and she saw her father had a violent temper, and my mother was very sheltered, and she saw her father beat her two older brothers with a strap, and her oldest brother, my late uncle Saul, he had like a college, I think he might have had a master's degree, but in his 20s he broke down and from all the abuse, and he was on disability with OCD until he passed away, I guess, of a heart attack in his mid-50s. And my father's mother was one of those people that nothing was ever good enough for her and everything, and his older brother used to beat the crap out of him and everything, and so they both had their issues. Even as a child, even if my parents never abused me in any way, shape, or form, even when I was a small child, I could sense they had issues from their upbringing. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's one of the, yes, there was the generational violence.
Right. And you see, that's very dangerous in a household when there's that violence for children to witness, and also, too, between the spouses, because they can go too far, okay, with their violence. And, and with children who are watching. Yeah. And with children who are watching this, you know, that does a terrible thing to them, because, quite frankly, you know, what happens is you have the fight, the flight, and the freeze. And I remember so well going through all three phases of that, and so many of us do who witness that. And any type of trauma, okay, is traumatizing, and that's child abuse. Now, it was said not too long ago, maybe a couple months ago, the studies show that children who witness, you know, terrible violence in the home, like what you're discussing and what I know of myself, many times it's equal to being in, like, say, in the front line as a soldier. It's the same type of trauma. It's the same amount of trauma. Maybe not the same type in the sense of, you know, they're using guns. Well, of course, this happens in homes too, doesn't it, though, with knives and all this other stuff. So children who witness this, even if they're not touched themselves, and they're always fearful that they might be, okay, they're witnessing terrible, traumatic experiences, and that does a terrible thing to a child, and that is child abuse. We'll get back to you, Doug, and I want you to think about more about, you know, some of the things you were talking about. We've had conversations off the phone. I know you certainly have with Pam. And, you know, so if there's something else you want to talk about in your relationships and so forth, maybe we can help you. Let me go down to Mary Ellen. Okay, Mary Ellen, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi. I was just thinking about the childhood trauma in the families as he was talking. And I don't know if there is any making sense of it, but recently, well, I grew up in a very violent childhood. My childhood was full of violence in my home. And over the years, I've had, I don't know, I call them like flare-ups, where all of a sudden it feels like you're right back in it, you know? And I've been thinking I've been doing really well, but most recently we had an incident right here in my building where I live. My neighbor person was having a relapse with drugs, and something I had never known of him, but he ended up getting in an altercation with a sheriff and nearly killed the sheriff right in front of me. I, you know, called 911 when it was happening, and I was witness to all of it. And it's really thrown me right back into that whole trauma, danger type feelings, I guess I'll say, where I'm second-guessing things and checking my surroundings and getting up at night and not knowing if it's safe or it's not safe. And those are really disturbing things to experience. And I think when you have a history of that, there's so much that comes along with it. So it magnifies a new experience. So I certainly understand when he says he questions, why did I have to go through that? You know, why was it this way? And why was my family the way it was? Because I don't think there really are answers many times. It's just, how do we manage and how do we heal from it? I don't think we can be certain why anyone does what they do. So
That's good, Mary Ellen. Yeah,
yeah,
that's good.
Thank you.
Well, you know, thank you. When we witnessed all that, you just said something right there that kind of blew me away, because I so much felt so helpless and hopeless as a child, because what is it that anyone can do? When you're a child and you're witnessing this, you can't stop it. Okay?
No, you can't.
No. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I keep telling myself now, I'm not a child, I'm an adult. I know how to handle myself. I couldn't run out there and get involved in the situation thinking I'm going to rescue someone. The smartest thing to do was stand back, call for assistance for the sheriff. And I did just that. So the state troopers were here almost instantly. And had they not come, I don't know what would have happened. I fear that I know what would have happened, but thankfully the situation turned out different. But I think I just have to keep telling myself, I know how to make better choices. I am capable of keeping myself safe. I can move forward. Those kind of things are stuff that I think we have to hold on to. So, yeah.
Well, you know, it never really goes away. Like if I close my eyes and look backwards, I can see those moments of terror. You know, you always can do that, but we can move forward.
Yep. It's like somebody mentioned the other night on one of the shows, one of the guests, and said something like, would she reach a point where she was healed? And then she said, maybe there is no final point. We just go through phases, maybe like a layers, you know, you progress and you gain confidence and you gain a freedom from it. But
at any given
time, something could trigger it. And you have to stop and recognize that you're not in that same spot anymore. And you can move forward. And I think each time becomes easier. Yeah.
See, Mary Ellen, that's very good for Doug, okay, what you just said. Because you said to recognize that you're not in that same spot, okay, that you were at the time. And maybe not accept what happened, because that's not acceptable behavior, so I won't give it that accept word. No. But we can learn to move forward, because we're not back then, we're here now. Okay?
Yes.
And thank God we're here now. that was an awful thing to watch, all of that stuff, and believe me. And, you know, many children then do get hit also. And then there are always those that stand in the background and wonder if they're going to be next. So it's a very bad situation, very bad situation. But we are where we're at today. And some people are just starting the healing journey. Other people are halfway through the healing journey. It doesn't really matter. What matters is that, you know, we can heal if we get the proper help. So, I like what you just said. And anyway... I'm going to go to Bill because I haven't. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, honey.
I was just going to say, for anyone listening, I wouldn't want them to think if they have a setback that they failed, because that's not it. We just keep moving forward and we handle a setback better each time it occurs. We've made more progress. We're never where we used to be. And just stay positive and keep moving forward.
I like that. I like that. And we can, Mary Ellen, okay? We can.
Yeah.
And that's too, if people, this is why we have our contact list. If you're having a setback, okay, you can call people, you know, day or night and, talk to them. Or you can be a part of the programs that I had just, mentioned too. Because if you have a therapist, that's great, or a counselor, that's great. Whatever it takes to heal, because everybody's different, you know that. And everybody heals differently. But what you said was very good. I thank you for that, Mary Ellen. That was good. Let's go down to Bill so he doesn't feel left out, okay? Hold on a second. He's only the founder. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're
okay.
excited to hear from him.
Yeah. Hey, Bill,
thank
how you doing?
You. I'm doing well. Thank you for including me. I'm actually working in the background, as I always do on Sunday night, but on Friday night. But I'm delighted to this topic because... I think what she said is profound. I have found that that recovery is progressive, but it's not constant. It's not a straight line. And what you just said is part of that process. You know, you may or may not have a significant amount of time where it feels, you know, like things are going along and so forth, blah, blah, blah. And then you can kind of stumble a little. It doesn't mean you're failing. It means that, perhaps your life has changed a little bit. Perhaps you've been doing things now that you weren't doing before. Maybe you need a little input from some fellow survivors, whatever it is. You know, by the way, I think one of the hallmarks of what we do to ourselves is we try to stay alone too much. That's not helping. So, you know, this is a phenomenon that I recognize many people will go through, and it's okay is the point. Just remember that you got to get back up, you know, and put yourself back on the horse, so to speak. And we all, almost all of us experience this is the point, you know. So so don't be discouraged, I guess is what I'm saying. But thanks, Carol, for leading the show. I'm sorry to hear our guest is under the weather and so forth, but we'll have her back another time as we have some open dates coming up even in June. Maybe we can shift her to, but that's okay. I know we're going to have a good show. I never worry about it, especially not with Carol at the helm. Jeez.
Well, listen here. We've got a nice-sized panel here. They're all here, and they're all making the show, you bet.
That's
but
right.
Anyway, I thank you for that. Let's go down to, yeah, let's go down to, did he drop off? Mark, are you there? There you are. Yeah, there you are. Oops.
What happened? My phone just...
Well, yeah, I saw that. It like happened right in front of my eyeball here. I can't say eyeballs. My one eyeball isn't working right. Okay, so what do you have to say about all of this? And then I'll go to your wifey.
I don't know what happened. My phone was sitting here on the thing, and all of a sudden it just went off. I didn't even touch it. Okay.
Are you sure?
I might have breathed on it. I don't know. But I don't have a question, but I have a thought, you know, it just came to me as you guys were talking about domestic violence and how it affects children in the home. Now, of course, I personally didn't experience, but now since I've been volunteering here with NASCA, I'm starting to make sense to what I remember as a child, seeing some of my classmates and even some of, their behavior. And now I'm thinking back, well, you know, maybe they were in a very bad home, a domestic violence situation. And that's why they were the way they were, you know, because they usually were the guys that, you know, wore the black leather jackets and had, the tough guy attitude with the teachers and back in those days, you know, the teachers, they didn't have no second thought about slamming you up against the wall. You know, it wasn't no such thing as calling the cops. And now I guess I'm learning, you know, just for me learning, I can understand, you know, because I once told Pam, I don't remember any kind of child abuse in my neighborhood or anywhere. But now, since I've been on here for the last 5 months, I'm beginning to think, well, yeah, there may have been child abuse going on, domestic violence going on, because, you know, some of the traits that have been shared about children who experience and witness and even part of the domestic violence, how they act towards the outside world with their friends and others, I get it now, you know, and
absolutely.
It's just, for me, you know, it's a learning thing, and, you know, I hope people listen and learn and try to prevent it, you know, even in their own homes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That would be a wonderful thing if more people, first of all, they have to recognize that they're a part of that. Unfortunately, a lot of people that come from volatile homes like that, they think that that's like the norm, okay, because that's what they're so used to. And then they don't realize just how they present themselves to other people, and that's a very scary issue. But what you said is absolutely right, because, you see, the violence affects children in a psychological way, in such a psychological way that it does cause behavioral issues, and that would be delinquent, like you were talking about, or violent behavior, right? Abuse of others, mm-hmm. Withdrawal. Some kids withdraw, okay, where other kids are the opposite. Suicide attempts or self-injury, especially amongst those that are withdrawal, okay? and then high-risk sexual behaviors or teen pregnancy. So that's just a few things, and there's a lot more, but I won't get into that. But right there is a mouthful, because delinquent or violent behavior, which you touched on, abuse of others, which you touched on, withdrawal, suicide attempts or self-injury, high-risk sexual behaviors or teen pregnancy. So you see, when people, you know, talk about domestic violence, sometimes it doesn't get the attention that it needs. You know, and if I just call the cops and cart this one away, cart that one away, and then a lot of times because of the system there, they end up back home anyway, and the cycle goes on and on and on and on. And it actually, you know, helps bring a child up in that sense, because when I say help, it shows them you are the parents are the example. And what they're seeing is what they're learning, okay? So then they take that what they've learned outside, and a lot of times they end up in juvie, like where I used to work, or they end up in jail, or unfortunately some of them do end up dead. They end up many times with alcohol and drug abuse. In fact, there is a statistic here, which I'm not going to look up right this second. I have many papers. But the statistics show that kids who come from violent backgrounds, violent homes, are more apt to get into alcohol and drugs and other things such as that risky behavior than any child, okay? And so it's not always about sexual abuse that we speak about on NASCA. We speak about sexual, physical, mental, emotional, and neglect. And all of these abuses take a toll on a kid if they don't get the help that they need. And if they come from violent backgrounds, they many times, I'm not going to say all the times, but many times they turn into volatile type of people. This can happen. But let's go to Pamela up here. And Pamela, maybe you have something you'd like to say or make a comment about. Go ahead.
Yeah. When I think about what Doug was saying, I think about, you know, we were children when these things happened to us, right? But we have a tendency to think that it was our fault, and we self-blame. Because when we're young, we don't have the capacity to see the flaws and wounds of our caregivers. Developmentally, we don't have the ability to step out of our own experience and perceive that our caregivers aren't capable of meeting our needs. You know, so who else do we have to blame if we can't blame our caregivers? And then when you get older, you're like, okay, it wasn't my fault. So where do I go from there? What's the next logical step to go to? And to me, was evil. So, so instead of blaming myself, let me blame it on evil. Well, what is evil? I mean, it's a concept that we can't really even define. It's like an abstract concept. So, you know, evil is evil. In other words, so if evil is evil, then we separate the behavior of a person from who they are. Okay, like say my mother and my stepdad were monsters to me, but yet they provided for me. You know, how do I fit that into a concept? You know, well, it can't be, because they had no parental skills. They had no, they really didn't have concern for us. But, you know, they had to feed us because they would get in trouble if they didn't. So it was really their own self-preservation that even kept us alive, right? I mean, my mother told me that if abortion would have been legal, I wouldn't be here today. I mean, she out and out told me that. She didn't want any children. But she didn't know how to stop it back in the day, you know, back in the 60s. She didn't have much to stop pregnancy, so she had three girls, bam, 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 and didn't want any of us. So yeah. She found a pedophile that would take care of us, and she worked in the bar 6 nights a week and left us with this monster. And on Sunday, she wasn't there. She went out and partied. So, you know, I don't even go there. You know, that person, those people have to answer for themselves. They're going to have to stand before the creator of the universe. You know, I can lay my head down at night because I did not intentionally do anything to my children. Now, I was sick and I had problems with domestic violence because of my sickness and illness, and I'm sure they witnessed some of that. And to this day, I'm so, so, so sorry. I apologize to them. I've talked to them. They knew that I was sick and had to get on medication eventually, but you know, they did see some things that they never should have saw because of my bipolar before it was treated. I would tear up my house. I would cuss at my husband. I'd shout, scream, and yell for a couple of days, and then I'd come out of it because my chemicals would go back into balance, and I'd be, look, what happened, you know? And so finally I was taken, when I was in one of those episodes, I was taken to a hospital. ER, and the ER doctor just happened to be married to a bipolar person. And so when I was crawling around the floor trying to escape and scream and all these things, he said, I know exactly what's going on with her. They put me in the back of a police car and took me to Crossroads Regional Hospital about 50 miles away. They got me on the right medications, and when I got on the right medications, I never had an episode since. And the reason I stayed on my meds and complied, even though I felt better, is because I was a nurse and I understand chemicals in the brain. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, when they start feeling good as bipolar, they get off their medicine because they feel better. And then what happens? They go into an even darker, deeper place and have to be back on medicines, and it's like a revolving door with them. But, you know, you just have to sometimes just say, look, you know, I couldn't do anything about it, you know, and stop blaming yourself. Stop thinking you weren't good enough or unlovable, and that's why these people couldn't provide for you. You know, hurting people hurt people. And, you know, my people were probably hurt, but that didn't give them an excuse to do what they did, right?
No, no. But I like what you just said there. Because you said hurting people hurt people. And that's so true. Because, you see, they're so dysfunctional themselves, okay, that then they take that out on other people. And they're so sad. They're so angry. Does it, you know, is that okay? No, it's not okay to hurt other people. You know, and then you mentioned something else too, Pamela. The medicines. There are medicines out there today that help people. And I have known people, just like you just said, who thought, I feel well today. I'm not going to take my meds, okay? You do that for a few days in a row, and it you know this because you're also a nurse, but it messes up with the balance of the meds. And you have to go, and you have to have blood work done and get back to where you were. You might even have a med raised in a level as far as, you know, maybe you're on 50 milligrams of this, maybe you have to go to 60 milligrams or lower it, take one away, whatever it is, an adjustment. Maybe a person needs
right.
an adjustment because that's what
and
it turns into. Yes.
Yeah. One of my major health issues from being abused sexually from the age of 4 to 18 by my mother's second husband, 14 years. He would come into my bedroom almost every night, 5 nights a week, and have his way, make me do things to him. He would do things to me, you know, like, you know, I won't even say y'all know what he did. But I have insomnia. I can't sleep at night. And so that's when I became a nurse. I worked 11 to 7 shifts because that mm-hmm. fit me. Psychologically, and to this day, if I don't take a certain med to go to sleep, I won't sleep. I mean, the med doesn't make me sleep, it doesn't make me sleepy, but I can go to sleep at some point during the night. But if I didn't take that med, I would be up all night long. So,
yeah.
You know, I have to have my sleep meds, I have to have my bipolar meds that keep my mood swings, keep my chemicals in balance, to keep me from having the way up mood swing and the way low mood swing. And you have to be on the right meds, too. You know, if the meds aren't, you know, when I started on my Depakote for my bipolar and I stopped having those horrible mood swings, I mean, things would just roll off my back like water off a duck's back. I mean, it's just really, I mean, I was just like, wow, this is so different than, you know, than being, than getting so manic or so depressed over whatever was happening, you know. It was all internal. I was trying to deal with external things, but we have to deal with the internalized feelings that we internalize when we're abused, like anxiety and depression and all those things that we have because of the internal behaviors, internal feelings, emotions and things like that that we were made to deal with as children that we should have never had to deal with. We shouldn't have had fight or flight, you know, because my mother's second husband, it wasn't just sexual abuse. He would physically, emotionally, verbally abuse me and my two sisters, which I was the only one sexually abused of them, but he would actually come in with this huge, thick belt, and he would just stare us down, and just, and we were just little, I mean, little kids, right? And he would just lay bruises on us, on my back, on my legs, on my buttocks. There was hardly a day that I went to school that I didn't have bruises on me, stripes from that belt. And he'd come in and he'd pop the belt. He'd open it, pop it, open it, pop it, and set us up, you know, to be ready for the abuse.
Well, that's it. That's exactly right. That's what they do. You see, they have like a plan. They do. They have a plan. And some of them are terribly narcissistic. Others are just plain evil, like you said. My Lord. I mean, they can be just so mean, okay, and they don't care. This is the type of bringing up many times that they were brought in as a child. This is why I am so blown away that my mother, who was treated like a princess, mistreated me so, okay, and to the point of even my bare necessities were not taken care of, so I had to, me from a wealthy family, had to go and steal my clothing. I did get caught once, and I told them. They're not buying me clothes. And they gave me 2 days to come back with the money for the clothing that they allowed for me to keep. And I had a friend down the street. He gave me the money, and we went to the store, and I went in, and I paid for it. And they never called my mother, and they never called the police. But you see, when you are a person who is either, say, very narcissistic, you're very cruel, or maybe, you know, have a lot of mean streaks in you, because this is normally, this is what happens, not with my mother, but you come from a household where all this confusion, this chaos, all of this violence that you're witnessing, it becomes then a part of your fabric. You know, and you can become very ill from it. Yeah.
I used to bully my sisters because the pain I had, I had to go somewhere, and I would beat them up and do all these things. And today I can't have a relationship with either one of my sisters because they hate me from back then when my pain was put on them. They can't forgive me, and they think that I should have just been able to, you know, do it without hurting them, but they just don't know what I was walking through, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see why you say, thank God for the meds. Or maybe Doug said that. I'm not sure which one said it. Or maybe Mary Ellen said it. Someone said that, blasted. But anyway, okay. So the point is no one should feel embarrassed, all right, if they do take meds. There have been people in the past that thought that people should feel embarrassed. That's not so. If you're taking a medication that is helping you not only feel better, but function better, and that actually works on the brain, Pamela, I don't have to tell you that, but when you have those meds inside of you and they're a positive, your levels are correct, okay, 50 milligrams of this, 60 milligrams of that, whatever, your levels are correct, then it's actually working on those areas of the brain that are dysfunctional, that need help. It can be even electrical.
Right.
Okay.
And
so
thank you.
It's good. It's good. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I have to say thank you to my husband. He is now my pharmacist. He sits at the bedside, and he puts little pills in each of the little days. And then when it's time to take my meds in the morning, he puts them in the bottle and says, here, take the meds. And I'm like, I'm not ready to take them yet. Put them over there. He follows me around. He does not want to go back to the day when I was not functional. So I thank him. He and I.
Well, I think he's a saint.
I tease him.
Well, we're going to call him Saint Mark. We have a Saint Mark.
Yeah.
There you go. Because, you know, when people...
Say,
yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I tease him and say, you need to take the meds. I tease him and say, you need to take the meds. I'll be okay.
He needs to pop some V's or something. Oh, my God. Some happy pills.
Okay,
I don't know. Maybe
all.
Not the V's. That's a done.
That's all I have
but,
to say. So maybe somebody has
well, that was
to say
a, that was a mouthful, and it was very good, Pamela, because it shows, you know, it doesn't matter what profession you come from. It just simply doesn't. When you come from backgrounds that are so dysfunctional, okay, where it does total damage to a child, and that means spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, all those things that we speak about, that child has to heal or not. And if they don't heal, then they end up, you know, in trouble. Or a lot of times they take their lives, or they just end up terrible bullies, or you know, they're just people that are just so miserable that they take it out on, like you had said, on the whole world. And I think that's probably a big part of our world too, is the fact that there are so many dysfunctional people, and you know, they came up in backgrounds from backgrounds that were so dysfunctional, so therefore they're dysfunctional. And they don't have the proper people to guide them. Like with the, I worry about the college students and the things that they're being taught in college. Hey, everything has changed in the school systems too about what they learn. And I'm sorry, but I'd rather go back to the, you know, we used to have that little poem, reading, writing, and arithmetic, because and said just said that way, because that was stable. Whereas today we don't have that in our society. And our society, we the people, are going to be the ones that are going to rise up or not, but rise up, hopefully, and help straighten out the mess that we're in, and so that there isn't violence in the streets. I want to go back to New York City and feed the homeless. I was happy doing that, certainly being here, right here on NASCA, but I was able to juggle it and do both. But I can't do that right now. There's too much trouble. So this is a very bad thing, a hard world that we're living in. And those people who suffer from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, they are being triggered left and right, especially if they watch TV, right? Left and right, because what do they see? Violence. And many times that is where they came from. Okay, let's go down to Doug here, and then we'll go down to Mary Ellen. Doug, what would you like to discuss here?
Well, just that this is a very painful subject matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm 47 now, and it's like an onion, you know. You just keep peeling away different layers.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I mean, it's just hard accepting the fact, you know, I grew up in a violent home and a dysfunctional home, and, you know, my parents were always fighting. My father would say one thing, my mother would say another. They fought their battles through me. I felt like a pawn.
Yep.
My father was very nasty, but my mom, you know, they both had Munchausen syndrome by proxy, where it's like... You know, it was insane. It was just all messed up, and it was all, it was messed up. I won't use other language, but it was just really messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And
you said something very important right there, though, Doug, for you and for everyone. Because you see, many times we use the onion as an example on this show, and I even in school or wherever, the onion, it's used, the onion. And it does have layers to it. And what you're doing, even though you may not feel it right now, okay, maybe you feel like you're stuck or you don't know what to do with the feelings that you have that you're dealing with, and that's what your therapist is for. But you do go through different layers. And the fact that you're saying that you're going, like, through the different layers shows growth. You don't want to stay where you're at. You want to move forward. Because if you move forward, then you can live. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's like there's three things you could do. Move forward, stagnate, or live in the past. And stagnation and living in the past are not good, so.
No.
And
we can't change the past. We can't.
Nope.
But we can change ourselves. And that's something that Bill is very good at saying. We can, and I think that comes from AA too. We can change ourselves if we have the proper help, okay, and the proper people to talk to, you know, support groups and all this other stuff. Because we can't fix what happened to us and we can't fix what happened to them. We can't. It's gone.
Nope.
It's in the past. Nope. So what we have to do is work from this point forward and move forward. And that's where the onion, the layers of the onion comes off, you know. Everyone's on different, you know, points of their healing journey. Some haven't even gotten on their healing journey. And that's why we try so hard, you know, here at NASCA to let them know that there is such a thing as the healing journey. And you start from day one and you move forward with the proper help.
Right.
And those also, too, you know, that you can turn to. Let me go down to Mary Ellen in New York. You said something very good. I like that onion. You brought that up. Okay. Mary Ellen, go ahead. Do you have something you would like to say here or make a comment about?
Yes. I was just thinking as he was speaking about, you know, being stuck and being in the pain. It's hard work that we do when we're healing. So it's important to take good care of ourselves during that time as well. And one of the things that I've kind of since COVID actually have been mindful to make myself do is go for walks and look for something pretty. There's so much nature out there, or the way someone decorates their yard, or the flowers popping up. And when I see it, stop and spend a moment and just recognize it. And if I have my phone, I take a picture so I can save it and tell myself, you know, there is beauty in this world.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to look a little harder, but I'm going to find it. And life is good. And it gives me a different sort of mindset. So it's like a positive. I can feel happy. I can feel confident. And I can feel growth. And I know that, you know, life is good. And so I was just thinking that maybe that might be something that would help as well for him to find something that he makes himself do on a positive note, because when we're trying to work through all the heavy stuff, sometimes it's difficult to step away, but it's really important.
Mm-hmm. What you just said is very important. It's for Doug, but it's for many people too, Mary Ellen.
Yeah,
because you see. Yeah, because sometimes we are so filled with doom and gloom, okay, because of what has happened. Look, we have a mind. We can look backwards.
Yeah.
But that's not healthy, okay? Yeah.
Right.
So
if
you can find something of interest, something like you were saying, beauty, where is the beauty in the world? Well, where I am right now, it's summer. okay? We cover the whole world. So, I mean, you know, right here is summer, and I see everything in bloom. And I have to admit that years ago, seasons would go by, and I wouldn't even look at the beauty of the seasons because I was so filled with upset and gloom.
Absolutely.
That,
I can remember them days for myself, yeah.
Yeah. Somehow it goes by, and we don't see it. That's a whole season, maybe a whole year
mm-hmm.
lost. I love the fall. I love to see the changing of the leaves if we have them. Sometimes it doesn't change enough for me. You know, this year in New York, I'm over here, whatever. And but I do love the fall. And but I like summer. I don't like the heat so much, but I do like the beauty of the summer also. They're both very beautiful. And of course, springtime, if we have a spring, many times it's rebirth, you know, it's rejuvenation. And then you
mm-hmm.
have, of course, you can see beauty also in the wintertime. It's a time like to sit and to think and to grow and think about what you're looking for in the future, you know. And
mm-hmm.
it's a quiet time. It's a quiet time. And I love snow. So you see, every I don't like shoveling it, though. Forget that. But, no, I get the kid down the street now. But, you know, every season, if we look at every season, we can see beauty. In the summertime, if you're a fisherman or if you do boating, you know, or other kind of sports, say sports, you can get out there in the spring and the summer, and you can be more active. And when we get more oxygen in our lungs, it refreshes our brain. I read an article on that not too long ago. That's right. I don't know where it is. You should see my office.
I like that.
It's the truth, though, because if we refresh the oxygen in our brain, okay, if we do that by going out and taking deep breaths, okay, and getting all of that good, clean, fresh air, and I'm saying to God, I hope that it's good, clean, fresh air, but you know what I'm saying. you know, get it into you, breathe it, and you feel better. You feel better.
Yes.
Take a walk around the block. Go ahead.
You know what, Carol?
You want to say something? What?
I'm not sure where that expression you referred to comes from that I use all the time because, you know, I've been doing this stuff for, I don't know, you mentioned, you said Bill always says blah, blah, blah. It might be an AA thing. I don't think it's an AA thing. It might be.
What is it?
But anyway, I don't remember.
Yeah, go ahead.
You mentioned it. But what I want to talk about.
I don't know. It's stuck in my head. Go ahead.
What I want to talk about is what's come up since then with Mary Ellen talking about the flowers and so forth. I can recall, I don't know where these pieces of information come from, but I do know where this one I'm about to say comes from. It was during an acid trip. Now, that's not something I recommend. But I was having...
I'm sorry.
I swear to God, this is important, though. I was having what they call a bad trip. Okay, I was not comfortable inside myself, and there's nothing. Once you put the acid in you, it's got to go through your system. That takes many hours. So anyway, I'm sitting there with a friend of mine who had also dropped acid. He was fine, but I was not comfortable, and he knew it. So he said, "What's going on?" I said, "I don't know. I just can't. You know, I can't calm down." He said, "Okay, look at the grass." I said, "What?" He said, "Look at green." So I look at this lawn that was right there and was cut, and you know what? It calmed me down. He said, green is a calming color. So whenever you feel like that, look at green. And the brighter the green, the better, he said, but it'll automatically calm you down. It's true. So it has to do with what you guys are talking about. You know, there are studies that have been made about things like, being at the ocean and watching the waves crash, right? Or just at a lake and watching the shimmer of the little waves, right? That brightness. Obviously we're all attracted to campfires. It's a human phenomenon. We love to sit around campfires. Well, you know what? A fire is one of those things too. It calms you down. it's a communal thing, even if it's as simple as a candle or a couple of candles. It's the flame that does something to us, and it's primeval. I don't know it's where it comes from, but we were, and probably still are, animals a lot of the time inside of us. It's reactions that we have, you know, in our amygdala or something, in our reptile brain, that we calm down. And these are all techniques that they're kind of like biofeedback techniques. They're things you can do deliberately that can calm you down, which includes breathing, by the way. Breathing regularly and deeply and for multiple times in a row until you can actually slow your heart rate. You can feel that.
Yes.
You can slow your heart rate, and you can slow the energy that's going on in your brain that's keeping you scatterbrained, if you want to call it that, something like that. It'll calm down. So anything that has to do with biofeedback is really, really helpful. And these are things, you know, we always talk about extra tools that you can use in recovery. Well, that's an example.
Absolutely.
That, you know, anybody, it's available right now for everybody, these techniques we're talking about. And and don't shortchange yourself is, I guess, my comment for right now, because they're all there and they really do work. So there you go.
Yes,
there's
they
one.
Do.
But I can tell you the green thing came from an acid trip.
I'm going to tease you about this later.
I swear.
Oh, my God.
I swear. I was in my early 20s probably when it happened, long before recovery.
Yeah, me too. Someone put one in something in my drink. It was acid, and with a friend of mine, and I had a bad trip, and I lost 8 hours.
Yeah.
8 hours.
Yeah.
And I was driving, Bill, and I ruined the total underside of my car, the electrical system. I don't know how it happened. Yeah. So I was very good man, let me tell you something. In fact, I called the cops on that bar, and I said, hey, I had half a drink, and I went nuts. And, you know, so I'm glad you had acid trip.
We're not recommending what you just said, but we are.
No.
And I'm not recommending the taking of acid either, obviously. But I am recommending, look at green. Green's all around us. Maybe not
That's
in
right.
winter. But you can find something green to just look at and kind of lose yourself in. It could be a photograph or a painting or something. But most of the year, there's green around us in the trees, in the grasses, in the bushes. And it will calm you down if that's what you pay attention to for a little while. So anyway, there you go.
Well, that's true, because I've read about that. And in sociology class, which is unusual because you don't usually talk about that. It's more of a cultural thing. But we got into we were talking about calming of people and some people with their dancing with some cultures, okay, and all this other stuff.
Right.
But also, But also, too, you just brought that up because we did talk about colors. Red is a fiery color. And I remember that class. And green was considered, and blue, light blue. Those two were considered to be the calming type of colors. So if people can look at the sky, I guess, I don't know, and if they just lie down and look at the sky, and I like to lie down and look at the clouds and have formations, that actually calms me down to lay down and just look at the sky and breathe. We've mentioned breathing. You know, and that's so important, is to get that you know, air in to breathe. And maybe just change what's going on, whatever it is that upset you, whether it's something in the house or something outside of the house, whatever it is, I don't care what it is. Go outside and walk. Go outside and look at the beauty, which Mary Ellen brought up, you know, and the colors and everything else, because, yes, you can get a lot right from nature and learning how to breathe right. sometimes I get so jammed. My brain gets so jammed because the phone is ringing. People are calling me there, and I have people knocking at the door. Ah, go away. I do that. You hear me at times. My cell phone's going off. I'm trying to run a show, and I go, shut up. You know, and I take and put it in the other room. I don't, you know, because it's like too much. I'm trying to do too many things at one time. And so you eliminate some of the things that you can around you, and certainly go outside if you can. Once you're off the show, you go outside, breathe, look for pretty colors, look for beauty, because where it's thrown right now, so much ugliness is thrown at us, and we already know about ugly. Okay, we already know about ugly. So what we need is something that is not ugly in our lives. And that can be just simply walking out your back door. You're right.
You know, this works in urban environments, too, because I can tell you stories about how in early recovery I had a job that was very – I thought it was very stressful anyway. And mm-hmm. I would have regular kind of mini anxiety attacks in the building mm-hmm. while I was doing the job. But I was allowed to go for, like, coffee breaks and stuff like that. So what I would do is I would leave the building. And I would walk around the block. And a couple of days later, I'd walk around the next block, another block. You know, just leaving my space, my room and desk for that amount of time and putting one foot in front of the other, but actually leaving the environment and being in a new environment was a tremendous tool. It works great. So I recommend even that, even if you're not in a countrified arena, even if you're in the urban arena, just to mm-hmm. get out of the space you're in now, go to a different space for as little as, you know, 15 minutes. It'll do it. It'll change.
Absolutely.
It can really change your kind of your center point. And then you can go back and do more of your job, which is what I would do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
mm-hmm.
I like that idea, too, leaving your space. But I just wanted to say it doesn't have to be, you know, in a beautiful space. It can be in a city. You know, it can be anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's beneficial. And you know, we're trying to find things in our lives to make sense, okay, to make sense, because so much of our lives didn't make sense. And so if you're, you know, feeling jammed up, like I just said, you know, and I just like I feel like I'm getting hit from all kinds of different ways, you know, the thing to do is to remove yourself from that spot and just go out and maybe take a ride, like you say, go to a different place, you know, or just walk, you know, walk and look at something beautiful, because it's so important. And while we're on the healing journey, too, it's so important to throw positives in our way, because we've had far too many negative things. A part of healing on the healing journey is not always comfortable, because a lot of times, too, you have to sort of like look at yourself, you know, too, because there are things I can look back on now that I did that I shouldn't have done, and I knew I shouldn't have done. And
right.
So I did it, you know, and so I had to forgive myself for that, yes, because we're
right.
more apt to do risky things, okay, than other people, because of the backgrounds that we've come from. We put ourselves in risky
sure.
behavior, which we speak about, you
yeah.
know, at times. And but it's okay. You see, you have to learn. So we're very hard on ourselves many times. Why did I do that? Why did I do this? And why couldn't I have done that? Maybe I could have done more. Maybe I did too much. Well, you know, all these things go through our minds. And many times our minds can just, like, spin around. And you have all these thoughts. And I think that the best thing to do when that happens, I know it works for me, is, again, to remove yourself, go out and busy yourself. I don't care if you go shopping. You don't have to be a shopaholic, but just go shopping. Go into a store, walk around.
Right.
Or if you're in the urban areas, go into a museum, start looking at things, be around people, if you can. Be careful right now. But, you know, find a different spot to go to that gets you away from. Okay? So you're going to and away from. And then end up getting an ice cream cone or something. Top the day
sure.
off. and then go back home, and you'll feel a lot better, and you can handle things better. You'll do constructive things. You'll sit down. You'll pay your bills. Maybe you'll start cleaning the house, or you'll do this, or maybe you'll go shopping, or whatever it is that you have to do, then it doesn't become burdensome, and it gets done. So it's also about, you know, controlling ourselves, too, and learning what it is and how to make ourselves feel better so that we can be more productive. And when we're productive, then we like ourselves more too. So all of this is positives. And Mary Ellen is the one that started it up. Okay? She had some good words there. And so people who are, you know, in a slump, it's not a good place to be. Call and get help. Go to a group, call the night owls, call other people in the daytime. It doesn't have to be the night owls. Call whomever you need. Reach out. I think that's what I'm trying to say. Reach out. Instead of staying in where you're at, reach out and go out and do something. It doesn't have to be costly. You don't have to spend a lot of money to get yourself in a better place. Because when you're outside looking at beauty, that doesn't cost a cent, okay? And yet it's very good for the mind and the spirit. Because our spirits, as we were children, which grew into adulthood until we started to get help and started to find support groups and things like that, we were in a very bad place. And we don't want to stay in that bad place. Some people get comfortable in that bad place, and then they never heal. What a shame. Well, you don't want to be a part of that category of people, because then you're not living your life, and you're not going to be happy. And then your mind is always going to be sad, and your heart is going to be sad. So it's better to move forward, to find beauty in life, to find people that are not toxic. If you're around toxic people, get away from them. Don't keep saying to yourself, oh, well, maybe they'll change in time. No. They probably had far too many years to be toxic in your life. I know people that stay around family because they're family. And so they're going to try and accept them even though they're toxic people. And then they take the punches and the blows. No, it's not acceptable. They're not acceptable. And it's not your fault. Get away from them. So anything that's toxic in your life, get away from. And then you can truly get on your healing journey and start moving forward. Okay. So, Mark, is there something that you want to add to this? Or think about? I mean, I know you – go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up with what you were saying about reaching out. And I'm going to address this to Doug. I just want to applaud you, Doug, and encourage you. That I've noticed, you know, since I'm on the blog talk a lot, I've noticed you've called in quite a bit in the last month. And I want to encourage you to keep doing so, because here you're amongst friends. You're amongst people who care about you. You're amongst those who know pain. And you can share without, you know, remorse. You can share without, you know, judgment, and people that can help you, like some have been on the journey a lot longer and can share their experience. I just wanted to just applaud you and encourage you to continue to call in, because, you know, it'll help you, and it seems to have been helping you. I've noticed you've been speaking up more, and that's a good thing. That's excellent. And I just wanted to share that with you, because it's been on my mind since I've seen you call in quite a bit. And I just want to say, keep it up, and because this is a place you can be, and you can share, and you can talk.
Yeah, and you won't be judged.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Mark, what you said was really very kind and nice. It's accurate, because you know, we've had other guys that have called in, men have called in. And this is a new thing for a lot of men that are calling into to NASCA now. We have quite a few that have called in recently, especially. And, you know, this is very, very healthy for them. And it's healthy for society because, you see, if you keep all this stuff pent up inside of you, And if you should happen to be married, you can take it out on your family in a very negative way. And you don't grow, okay? And you're very unhappy. And this is where many times, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, we'll see men or women who keep it in, and there's not too many women. Women are more apt to speak than men. But if you keep all that up and you're in a bar, you're going to drink too much, you're going to probably act stupid, I don't know, and you're going to go home and, you know, watch out. Here comes daddy, okay? Oh, God, here he comes. And I know I've gone through that. And, you know, what happens is daddy comes in the house and you look for places to hide, all right? That's not living for anyone. It's not living for the person who's afflicted, the person who needs help, the person who needs to go and get that help, whether it be through AA and a psychiatrist or a therapist or a counselor, whomever. The point is go and get it because it's time. You deserve to be happy too. See, this is what men don't understand. They have all throughout time been told you have to be macho, you have to suck it in, you have to suck it up, whatever, which way they put it. You have to be, you know, have to do this, you have to do that. You're not allowed to feel. You're not allowed to have emotions. You can't cry. Only sissies cry, okay? You can't express yourself. Oh, that happened 25 years ago. That happened 40 years ago. Today is today. But you know what? If you never worked on it and you didn't have the right therapists or counselors or psychiatrists or other people, whomever, if you don't have the right people to work with you, then many times you can stay in that place, and that's not a good place to be. So today we have more guys that are realizing, hey, I'm a person too. I have feelings too. I have emotions too. And if I want to cry, it's okay. And I need attention also. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's exactly the way it should be. What's that?
I just wanted to add this little tidbit of not all this information. In the last 5 months on the show here, there's been about 28% of them have been men now. And
great.
I would just encourage, like you said, to call in and tell your story and share it. Just what Carol said, it's important to you and it's important to those around you. And I would even challenge men to call in more because let's try to get it to be 50-50, you know, 50% men, 50% women. Just a little challenge there. But, you know, there have been a lot of men calling in, and that's good. And I wanted to ask Bill something real quick.
Go ahead.
You were talking about green being a relaxing color. You know, what about blue?
Blue is something, that's right.
Like Carol said, blue is considered a cold color. But if it's
light blue,
like if it's a sky blue, that can be helpful too. But blue overall is just is about as cold as red is hot, you know. So absolute red would be very hot and absolute blue would be very cold. So it would take a milder blue. But, yeah, I'm sure it would help, absolutely. And I think when you're looking at blue, you usually think of the sky and you think of clouds, like Carol said. That's really relaxing, kind of play with the clouds and let your brain just go away. So I can see that, too, the sky blue with the clouds and the white clouds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah. And I
By
thank
the way,
you for
Mark,
making
that was
that...
a terrific share you just made, the one – where you congratulated Doug. That was a terrific show, and I appreciate you doing it.
I think that was wonderful that he did that. And maybe you too, as guys, you could talk together. You know, you may say, Mark, that you're not a survivor, and you've lived with Pamela for, I forget how many years you said, forgive me. I think you said 40, something like that. But she being a survivor. But the point is you have a lot of good common sense. And you also have a way about you that's very calming. So,
you know,
I don't know if you want to be put on the list or not. That would be, you'd have to decide. But you're a good person, a good go-to person for a guy also. I just
you
want you
what?
To know that. What's that?
NASCA members, NASCA members do not have to be child abuse survivors. They can
right.
be our supporters, too.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Mark's becoming more and more knowledgeable about
mm-hmm.
the issues with child abuse. And, if you know, we encourage that. We want our spouses and our neighbors and our coworkers and so forth, even if they're not survivors, to support the effort, and we're happy to include them as members of an NASCA family, like Mark is.
Thank you.
Well, I'm delighted he's here. I'm delighted he's here. Trust me. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Because he has a very calming way about him. And I like
yeah.
that. Sometimes I feel like, gee, maybe I should call Mark. You know, he's a guy, and he has good common sense and so forth. And so, you know, I'm just saying that. Hold on, I got to make you louder. Okay, there you go. Well, you know, Pam, you know, was that Pam I heard? My phone was dying. I don't know. But the point is he's very good also. You know, he's a good guy to talk to. Speaking of Pam, I haven't heard from her in a while, have I? Let me go to the top of the list. Pamela, is there something that you want to say? We're coming to the end of the show here. I think we've got, I don't know, 5 minutes left or something from what I can see.
Yeah, I just want to say that it turned out to be a very good show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like coming on multiple nights because you never know what's going to be said. You never know what you're going to learn. You never
mm-hmm.
know who's going to get helped, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I like what Mark said about to Doug. Doug, you're very loved here. And, you know, you can open up and tell us anything. I'm not going to judge you. You know, this is the place to be with if you're going to talk to anybody. NASCA's the place to be, and I want to thank Mary Ellen. She's a, you can tell she's a very loving and caring individual.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard her story or know if she has a story. And, of course, Bill,
mm-hmm.
our founder, I want to thank him for all he's doing and does do. That nobody even sees all the work he's doing behind the scenes. And, of course, loving Carol, our vice president, who has a great amount of wisdom. So if you have a question, call her. Believe me, she has wisdom, and so does Bill. And to my loving husband, thank you for being here tonight and supporting me as well. And, you know, we're looking forward to our show Monday night. It's a special guest night. We want everybody to come on and hear what our special guest has to say and call in and support.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I thank you for all those nice words for all of us here. But, you know, what you said is so true, though, and I want this for all men, though, okay, not just Doug, for all the guys. We are here, and we have a lot of compassion, because the reason why we have so much compassion is because what we went through, okay? And so we have a good understanding of how you feel. And because of that, we're able to, this is a good platform for men to come to. And I didn't realize that the stats were so high on our show there, Mark, that it was 28%. But, you know, anyone there that's listening right now, there are people listen to the computers and they listen later on, too, through the archives. But let me say something to you. Yeah, NASCA is a place that I've been here for 11 years this month. And I was on another show for 2 years before this show here. So it's been 13 years I've been on the radio. And I feel, of course, very comfortable because of all that time. But I've learned a tremendous amount of things from being on these radio shows, especially, of course, NASCA being here the longest. And you have to understand that you matter too, okay? It's okay. You know, to men are they think they have to be so firm and so strong and so that many times they're uptight. They, you know, they just have no place to go. They don't know where to go. Well, you have NASCA, okay, and NASCA does understand all of the abuses, the physical, the mental, the emotional, okay, the sexual and the neglect. Some of us have suffered from all of those. some of us have tried, many of us have tried to commit suicide at some time in our life because we were so miserable. And what we're trying to do here at NASCA is to help you to feel comfortable with yourself. And if you can learn to love yourself and know that you are a person of worth and that it was never, ever, ever your fault as a child when you were going through all of that abuse and seeing all of the violence like so many of us have seen all of that. That wasn't our fault. We were just kids. I had a kid come up to me one day. I mentioned this once on the street. This was right outside of New York. We moved to 5 miles down the street. It was Westwood, New Jersey. So at Bergen County, I lived there for a little while before moving to Staten Island. But anyway, this kid looked at me one day and said, "Why is your father, why does he drink so? Why does he act the way he does?" And I remember standing there looking at this little girl, and I was just a little girl. I hadn't turned 6 yet. But I looked at her and I said, "How do I know? I'm just a kid." See? I know.
So honest.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's the truth. We were just children. And they did so much damage. And I will not go to my grave with the damage. It doesn't have to define who we are. There goes my phone. Go away. Wow, I can't even see it. It doesn't have to define who we are. Because today there is NASCA. It's right here. And if you need help, we're here. So at no time feel like maybe, you know, you're different or you're unique. Because I hate to tell you this, but it's the truth. Most of us have been through what you've been through. Maybe the stories are not quite the same, but the feelings are. Okay, the feelings are definitely the same. So this is why you can come here and not feel judged. You can come here, relax, throw your feet back, and feel like you're at home. Because that's what it's like here. Okay, we don't judge you. We talk to you. Sometimes we have a lot of, you know, laughs going on. Tonight was a tender night. I'll call it a tender night. A night where we all shared and we all supported each other, gave each other some good ideas, and so forth and so on. We had a wonderful show. And it shows like this that help other people. It's one way that we can get our voice out. All right? Not everyone are authors. Some of us on here are. I'm one. Pam's one. I don't know. There's probably others. I don't know. But the point is, it's however which way we get our voices out there, through presentations, whatever, and it's time now, like Bill said the other day, to start thinking about those who can, who are far along in their healing journey, no pressure. But, you know, to go out maybe and give out handouts like I do many times and do presentations and so forth when we can, when we're asked, and sometimes even when we're not asked, I just barge in and give them my card and tell them who I am, and this is what we do. And this is, you know, it's a very good thing. Think of daycare centers. Remember, people. Daycare centers are where we put our treasures, and that's one thing I'm working with too right now is daycare centers, because they're starting to open up around here. Every state is different. But it's starting to open up around here. Okay, so I have to wrap up the show. I got the 90-second thing in my ear. So I just want to thank everybody that came on and thank you for your input. I'm sure that it was very good for a lot of people to hear what we shared tonight. And remember, you don't have to stay stuck, okay? Don't let it define your life. Live your life and find the beauty in life, okay? Thank you. God bless you. And good night. And we will be back here on Monday. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Have a good weekend. Okay. Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.